Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, last week, immigrant rights advocates celebrated the opening of two driver's license offices in rural Colorado. This is the last piece of a puzzle that began many years ago with legislation to allow those who are undocumented immigrants to access legal driver's licenses. We'll check in with the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition on why this is such an important issue for immigrants. Then we'll hear about efforts to remove school resource officers from local schools. This morning we'll hear about efforts in the St. Vrain Valley School District. After that, with summer truly here, but many people not necessarily being able to travel in the way that they may usually do in summer, we'll revisit a story from last summer where we hear about surfing, but this time you don't have to go to California or Hawaii. It's right here in Colorado. We'll hear about river surfing and why it is so popular here in the state. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, Frank Dabowski is your host on A Public Affair. This morning he speaks with John Taylor of the Boulder Chamber of Commerce on the impact on local businesses of the COVID-19 pandemic. At 9 o'clock, it is media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
On Friday, the Aurora Police Department announced the firing of two officers who posed in a photograph last year near where Elijah McClain was confronted by police officers and then died a few days later in the hospital. A third officer, Jerome Jones, who posed in the photo, resigned earlier last week. The Colorado Sun reports that Jones and the two fired officers, Erica Marrero and Kyle Dittrich, were smiling while reenacting a carotid hold similar to the one performed on McClain, in which pressure is applied to someone's neck to cut off blood flow to their head. A fourth officer, Jason Rosenblatt, was also terminated after receiving the photo in a message and replying, quote, ha ha, unquote. Rosenblatt was involved in the fatal encounter with McClain. Interim Police Chief Vanessa Williams announced the firings and for the first time revealed the photo, which has generated headlines across the country for several days. At Friday's news conference, Williams said that she was disgusted to her core and they were ashamed, sickened, and angry. She also offered her condolences and an apology to McClain's family. McClain, 23, died after being detained by officers during which first responders injected him with ketamine. He was not breaking any law, but had been reported to 9/11 as being suspicious. Wilson said the objectionable photo was taken in October last year near Memorial for McClain. The officers who were fired were found to have exhibited conduct unbecoming of an officer. Hundreds of demonstrators marched Friday evening from the site where police apprehended McClain to the Aurora Police Department's District 1 station. The Denver Post reports they declared that they would peacefully remain there until all the officers involved in McClain's death are fired. Protesters surrounded the District 1 station in what they called the APD occupation. They read McClain's last words over a loudspeaker and chanted at officers. The three officers involved in McClain's death have been taken off the street and were previously cleared of wrongdoing, but the state attorney general has begun a new investigation, and it was learned last week that the FBI and the Justice Department are considering whether to investigate McClain's death. The occupation at the police station continued into early Saturday morning. At 2:30 a.m., police officers ordered the crowd to disperse, saying in a tweet that the demonstrators were blocking access to the building. Police then moved in on protesters, but did not use pepper spray as they had a week earlier. By 4:30 a.m., Denver 7 News reported that the situation was under control as the police ordered remaining demonstrators to leave. Police said two men had been arrested, both for obstructing a highway or a passageway and failure to obey. Members of the Aurora City Council on Monday will consider a measure that would put into law a measure to ban chokeholds by police officers. City Manager Jim Twombly had earlier issued an order that banned the practice, but this ordinance would add it to the city code, which would be much harder to reverse. The Sentinel reports that Councilmember Juan Marcano said it is important to codify the bans so they cannot be rolled back by a change in department leadership, and so the community knows where the council stands on the matter. Marcano introduced the ordinance last month along with Councilmember Angela Lawson. A newly passed state law disallows chokeholds. The difference between the new state law and the Aurora proposal are the potential consequences an officer could face. At the city level, a violation of the ordinance would likely lead to disciplinary measures or termination. Members of the Aurora City Council also hear options on balancing the city's beleaguered budget due to projected shortfalls from revenue due to the coronavirus pandemic. On Saturday evening, hundreds of demonstrators rallied at Denver's Manual High School in an action called the Rise Up 4th of July Rally. The Denverite reports that the event took on multiple issues: educational reform, mass incarceration, immigrant detention, indigenous people's rights, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, and more. The message from the crowd was that many people in America still don't have the freedom and equality that were promised with the adoption of the Declaration of Independence on July 4, 1776. The demonstrators marched through the Whittier neighborhood before circling back to the high school. The Denver Post reports dozens of police officers stood blocks away, keeping their distance from the crowd. The rally included a performance by musicians playing stringed instruments who picked up where they left off in Aurora last weekend in honor of McLean and in protest of his death. Jefferson County officials announced yesterday their intent to pursue legal action against the management of Bandamere Speedway following Saturday's racing event and fireworks event. CBS 4 reports that the county health department said the Speedway management violated an agreement to limit attendance and promote the attendees' adherence to health guidelines for public gatherings during the coronavirus pandemic. Attorneys for the Jeffco Health Department and the drag strip had agreed to the stipulations the day before the event after a judge granted a temporary restraining order on Thursday. However, Dr. Mark Johnson, executive director of the County Public Health Department, said his employees witnessed crowded concession and common areas, as well as portions of bleachers where social distancing wasn't taking place and people unable to keep up with what the public health order requires. Today it will be sunny with highs around the metro area in the low and mid-90s. Tomorrow sunny but with increasing clouds and a bit warmer with highs in the mid to upper 90s. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 13 minutes past 8 o'clock. Immigrant rights advocates are celebrating last week's opening of two DMV offices in rural Colorado that will allow undocumented immigrants to get driver's licenses. The new Department of Motor Vehicle offices opened in Alamosa and Fort Morgan on July 1st. This has been a long-fought battle for immigrant rights advocates in the state, going back several years to pass legislation, including in 2013, the iDrive campaign. I spoke with Sienna Mann, who is the campaign manager with the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, about the impact this is going to have on immigrants and their families.
Up until 1999, everybody in Colorado, regardless of status, was able to get a license. And in 1999, there was a restrictive law passed that stopped allowing undocumented immigrants to get licensing in Colorado. And you're totally right. This has been a really long fight. Folks have been organizing, directly impacted immigrants have been organizing to get licenses back since around 2001. And in 2013, a massive coalition came together and finally was able to pass SB 251, which allows undocumented immigrants to license Colorado. This is one safety. It's better when more people are licensed and insured on our roads. And it's also really important for immigrant families to be able to drive with the confidence to get their kids to school, to go to work, et cetera. So the SB 251 program has been functioning since 2014, offering licenses to undocumented immigrants. And it's been very successful in making the roads safer. But it was very limited. And until last year, when we were able to pass SB 139 to open new offices, there were only three offices in the entire state that could process these licenses. And really, this left out rural immigrant communities. And so we are really excited. Last year, we passed SB 139 with bipartisan support in Colorado to open seven new offices, primarily in rural areas. And so the offices in Alamosa and Fort Morgan are the final two. And this is so important. Fort Morgan, the Fort Morgan office is the only office in northern Colorado, and so it's going to massively expand access for immigrant communities that are primarily rural and agricultural communities And same with the San Luis Valley. And so these are two parts of the state that have really been left out of this program. And we're really excited for folks in those areas to finally have access to get driver's licenses.
Take us through what life is like if you're an undocumented immigrant and you don't have a license, but you have to drive around. And this is, as you said, really important in rural areas where, you know, public transit might not be available. You have to travel further distances to bring your kids to school. And how this ties into this broader immigration issue where a simple traffic stop could result in somebody ending up in the legal system and then ultimately maybe with the deportation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not a directly impacted immigrant myself, but what we hear from community is that it's incredibly scary to drive without a license. So obviously a license brings that sense of security to immigrant families. What we saw actually in Colorado after 2006, SB 90 actually deputized state patrol agents as ICE agents. And what we saw was that based on a survey that we conducted through our hotline, was that around 60% of people that were pulled into deportation proceedings was because of driving, was a traffic stop because of driving without a license. And so really a driver's license is one of the first lines of defense because of the way that our police and sheriffs have become increasingly embedded with immigration. And so luckily we were able to get rid of SB 90 in 2012 here in Colorado. So we no longer have statewide agents that are deputized to work for ICE. But it's still absolutely a fear and absolutely a reason that people get pulled into deportation proceedings is driving without a license and then get pulled into the jail to get fingerprinted. Through the program ESCOM, Secure Communications, which was very much expanded under the Obama administration, anybody who's pulled into the jail is automatically fingerprinted, and those fingerprints are shared with the FBI and the CIA, as well as ICE. And so that's a way that we see people increasingly getting targeted through the what we call the Polimigra system, so the ways that the police and sheriffs are collaborating with immigration.
That's Sienna Mann. She is with the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition speaking about last week's event. Two Department of Motor Vehicle offices were opened in Alamosa and Fort Morgan to provide driver's licenses to those who are undocumented immigrants. It is 8:18. You're listening to KGNU. Well, there has been a nationwide movement to remove police officers from schools. They're known as school resource officers, but in many cities, we're seeing students of colour being disproportionately impacted by the presence of these police officers. Denver has taken a pledge to remove the SROs or school resource officers from Denver Public Schools. Efforts are afoot now for the Boulder Valley School District and also the St. Vrain Valley School District. KGNU's Miriam Schiff spoke with Alexandra Jacobson with the NAACP Boulder chapter, who's working with the St. Vrain Valley School District on the issue of school resource officers.
So the mothers that I'm working with, we all have students of color. And so during this national conversation, we definitely wanted to speak up and look at our district in particular. We're very close to BVSD. We see that what the work that the NAACP has been doing with BVSD. And so we really wanted to take a look to see how our district's numbers looked. And we may not have the same exact problems that BVSD does, but St. Vrain isn't immune to disproportionate discipline. So once we look at the data, we definitely were concerned and we spoke up and we said that we absolutely see the SROs are a problem. And we hope that the district is open to working with us and listening and really diving deep into the data. As of right now, it seems like their stance is they're not a problem, they're helpful, and we see that the data speaks differently for our district, but definitely watching what everything's been happening in BVSD and hopping onto their board meetings, we decided to speak up as well and look in our district.
So your district has said, no, we don't have a problem, but yet you saw a disproportionate discipline happening. How do they answer for that if they're saying we don't have an issue here? So where does the disproportionate discipline, don't they see it?
It doesn't seem right now. The superintendent, Don Haddad, has agreed in their last statement that they published that he does think that they could contribute to making some students feel fearful. But beyond that, they have not addressed how they have disproportionately targeted students of color. So there, I mean, this does go beyond just SROs, but there is a problem here and it hasn't really been addressed the way that we would have liked. But it seems as of right now, Don is receptive to how we have contacted him, and he has, and we do have a seat at the table. So we're looking forward to really, really showing the data, looking deep into it, and hoping that along with SROs, there can be other changes initiated.
That's Alexandra Jacobson, who is working with the St. Vrain Valley School District as part of her work with the NAACP Boulder chapter on the issue of school resource officers in schools. Now, tune in this afternoon at 3 o'clock for an extended conversation. In fact, it's part two of a conversation that began last Monday on Metro with host Miriam Schiff, taking a look at efforts to remove SROs in the Boulder Valley School District. And as we heard, also in the St. Vrain Valley School District. You can hear that conversation this afternoon at 3 o'clock and hear the first part in our archives. That's at kgnu.org/metro. It is 8:22. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU.
KGNU's 32nd annual Charles Sawtelle Memorial Mountain Jam, Safer at Home edition, is coming up on Sunday, July 19th from noon to 3 p.m. Though this year's bug won't allow us to listen and celebrate in person, we've put together an irresistible musical lineup for you to enjoy at home. The lineup includes three Colorado bluegrass and Americana bands, including the Cody Sisters, River Arkansas, and Beauregard. This virtual event is free and open to the public thanks to the generous support of our sponsors. RSVP by July 18th at noon. Attendees will be sent the link to the virtual event. Donations are welcome and appreciated as all funds raised from the Charles Sawtelle Memorial Mountain Jam directly benefit KGNU. Reserve your spot now at kgnu.org.
Up in the Henry Mountains, sleeping on the forest.
It is 8:23. Well, the coronavirus pandemic might have stymied your summer vacation plans. If you had plans to maybe hop on a plane to go to Hawaii or even Southern California and catch a few waves. Well, surfers, fear not. You don't have to even leave the state of Colorado to avail of some of the best surfing in the country. This morning on KGNU, we revisit a story originally broadcast on 2019 that takes a look at the growing river surfing movement right here in Colorado. When you think of surfing, Maui or Southern California may be locations that spring to mind. Pueblo in Southern Colorado may not. But this stretch of the Arkansas River is where a particular type of surfing began.
River surfing really got started, I'd say, you know, maybe 15 years ago. Right here, it's kind of considered the, you know, the birth of river surfing.
Bob Walker owns the Edge Ski and Paddle Outdoor Shop in Pueblo.
Some clients of mine that were taking a kayak lesson came in and, you know, they were going to learn to kayak because they were big surfers. They had moved here and that was their only choice. And after the kayak lesson was over, I went to my car and pulled out a boogie board and went down and started boogie boarding. And they were all enthralled with that. And they thought, God, if you can boogie board it, you can probably surf it. They ran home, dug out their quiver of surfboards, came down. And that afternoon we had river surfing in Pueblo, Colorado.
Like most river surf spots in Colorado, the waves don't usually occur naturally. The city of Pueblo was looking at ways to improve this stretch of river for fish habitat in a way that also benefited those who wanted to recreate on the river, says Amanda Cesar, recreation supervisor for parks and recreation in Pueblo.
So back in 2005, we entered in with the Corps of Engineers and GOCO for a fishing habitat grant. We were awarded the grant. It was completed in 2006, and it was an overhead dam that was built up that was extremely dangerous. Fish couldn't get over it. Now they have basically fish louders, which are what the rocks are there for, and it helps to not only help with the fishing habitat, but also makes a great recreational place for all of us to play at.
It cost about $2 million, says Cesar. But now the park itself brings in tourists, particularly in midsummer, for events like the Ark River Surfing Festival. This year's festival was delayed several weeks because the water levels were actually too high due to the abundant snowmelt. Too much water in the river flattens out the waves,
and surfers just get washed downstream. Pueblo may be considered the birthplace of river surfing here in Colorado, but now there are several surf spots throughout the state, says Alex Maurer of the Colorado River Surfing Association.
They're popping up all over the place. Confluence Park in Denver has a couple of waves that are good for surfing. The River Run Park in Inglewood, Colorado, that's probably my favorite park in Colorado so far. That's popped up. There's a wave in Thornton, Colorado called Dave's Wave. There is a new park that just got built in Eagle, Colorado. There's an awesome park in Glenwood Springs. That's probably one of the most infamous waves in river surfing.
Most whitewater parks have large boulders secured in the riverbed to create the waves. Other communities are investing in cutting-edge technology. River Run Park on the South Platte River has a mechanical wave shaper, three adjustable steel flaps embedded in the river bottom. This stretch of the Arkansas through Pueblo is still one of the biggest draws in the state, with surfers coming from around the country to ride the waves, like professional surfer Shannon Thomas.
I'm originally from Ohio. I just travel around and living in my van and in search of river waves and ocean waves in the wintertime. Basically, it's similar to surfing an ocean wave, but it's a stationary wave. So the water is rushing underneath you, but you are actually stationary. But every wave is different. There's left and right shoulders, just like an ocean wave. You can go left or right. And it's kind of an endless wave, too. You can stay on as long as there's no line, and as long as you can stay on the wave, you have pretty much an endless surf.
Thomas isn't the only one catching waves today. Ross Dieterman, who works at Bob Walker's surf shop, is waxing up his board before he launches.
It's the most wonderful experience you'll ever feel. There's nothing like gliding on water.
Water flow is crucial for parks like this one. Colorado has a complex set of water laws that determine who gets to take water out of the river. It wasn't until the early 1970s that the first non-consumptive water right was established. That's a right for water to remain in the stream. And that's crucial for whitewater parks. Amanda Cesar, recreation supervisor for Public Parks and Recreation in Pueblo, says they need to work closely with the local water board to ensure that there's enough water during peak recreation months of the summer.
We do have agreements that during peak season we can call for extra water rights. It's extremely hard because it does have to go to the board. It is the river, and we have to work with the reservoir on when they're releasing.
There are definite monetary benefits to keeping water in rivers like this. An analysis of the Poudre River through Fort Collins indicated a substantial economic value to keeping water in the river. Similar analyses have been done in Golden and Durango, showing millions of dollars flowing into local coffers as a direct result of recreation on rivers. But having more people getting into the river also creates increased awareness of the need to reduce pollution and improve overall stream health, says Bob Walker of Edge Ski and Surf in Pueblo.
I've already seen there's a couple of the guys that started out as just river surfers that have formed river cleanups, recycling. I think anytime somebody starts utilizing any space and enjoying it, they start taking care of it.
For Connecting the Drops and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Maeve Conran.
Connecting the Drops is a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio Stations and Water Education Colorado. Find out more at watereducationcolorado.org. Support is provided by CoBank, which provides financing solutions for rural water systems. Find out more at cobank.com.
And that story was originally broadcast in 2019 as part of our Connecting the Drops series. You can find that entire series at our website, news.kgnu.org, including the three episodes in June that we aired, half hour episodes looking at issues like water infrastructure, the pipes, the reservoirs, the systems that bring it to our house and bring the wastewater away from our homes. Also, the impact of COVID-19 on our water supply here in the state. And most recently, water justice. Does everybody have the same access to our water? All of that online at news.kgnu.org.